As a sponsor of the podcast, TAP Sleep Care wants to show you their studies. If you're hesitant in trying oral appliance therapy, go with one you can trust. Backed by over 45 independent peer-reviewed studies, TAP is the most researched custom oral appliance in the world with the best patient outcomes. It's not just a marketing slogan, it's real data that you can trust. Visit tapintosleep.com for a full list of studies and to find a provider near you. That's tapintosleep.com. On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So, there's another storm coming to Florida, you guys. I feel like I'm constantly giving you updates on the weather. My kids are going to be off another day this week because there's another storm coming. So I'm kind of fed up with storms. We've been super, you know, fortunate, and so many people have been so much more affected than us, but I just could do with hurricane season being over at this point. I organize my podcast into seasons of 10 episodes just to kind of help me plan out what I'm doing. And so I'm going to be taking a break for about 4 weeks after this episode today, and then I'll be back with 10 more new episodes, and I'm already working on those. So there's some really good topics and a lot of good stories that I think you guys are going to really like. So one of the things I've been looking into is I'm doing an episode all about different options for telemedicine and home testing, home sleep apnea testing. So we're going to kind of dig into that and look at some different companies and what they're offering. And I'm hoping that's going to help you guys out there, because that's something that you guys ask me about a lot. There's that. There's also a lot of you been asking about an update on my own journey with sleep apnea. And I was doing, you know, palate expansion and myofunctional therapy and all this stuff. And so I do have a really big update on that. The highs and the lows, and where I'm at right now with everything. So that's coming towards the end of the year. So people that have asked, there is an update on that coming. So today's guest is kind of funny because I always break all my own rules. But when I started the podcast, I had a pretty strict rule that I didn't want to interview, you know, reps from companies about their products. Like I wanted it more to be like patient stories, and it's fine if people are speaking to their own experience with products, but I didn't really want to, you know, like just give loads of companies a platform to sell their stuff. But having said all that, today's guest is like talking about a product he developed. But his name is Dr. William Noah, and I saw him do a webinar about this device on Enzo Data. Like they have some webinars, and I watched it really intently because he was talking about this device that made PAP therapy much more comfortable for people and reduced that feeling of claustrophobia and too much air pressure, right? So that was just like way too interesting to pass up. So I was like, I've got to have that guy on the podcast. And so since I had them on, they sent me one to try. And this little device, it really makes a big difference to the feel of the air pressure that's coming through your mask. So we really, I feel like, get into the minutiae of pressures and what exactly is happening with PAP therapy. I hope you'll stick with it and really listen to everything that he's saying. I try to keep relating it back to, anybody, like, try and not let it get too technical. But I think what he's done in developing this product is just really gonna help a lot of people. So that's why I really wanted to have Dr. Noah on. On to today's guest. So today I'm joined by Dr. William Noah. He grew up in Tennessee, and that's where he completed his medical training. And then he did his pulmonary fellowship at the University of Utah. In 1992, he returned to Tennessee to start a pulmonary and sleep medicine practice, the Sleep Centers of Middle Tennessee, which has grown into one of the largest sleep centers in the United States. Dr. Noah pioneered remote patient monitoring for sleep by requiring modems on all PAP patients beginning in 2006. In 2020, Dr. Noah received the Visionary Award from the Tennessee Public Health Association for developing a way to diagnose and treat patients with OSA across Tennessee and six neighboring states during COVID when other programs had shut down. So today we're going to be talking to Dr. Noah about his new company, SleepRes, and their revolutionary new device to improve PAP adherence called the VCOM. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Dr. William Noah. So listen, Dr. Noah, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Emma.
So start off by telling everybody a little bit about your background. So you're a sleep specialist. Do you want to explain where you are in the country, what your kind of work background up to this point has been?
So I'm a pulmonary critical care and sleep specialist who did all three for about 20 years. But the last 10 years, I've only done sleep medicine. And I am based in the Nashville area. We have three offices around Nashville, one about 30 miles southeast of downtown in a town called Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Our main building is there. And we have an office south of Nashville in an area called Franklin, Tennessee, a well-known city. And then we have one northwest in a city called Clarksville. All larger cities, but they're part of the metropolitan Nashville area.
Okay,
So
I'm
I've been there
nodding,
three.
but I'm originally from Scotland, so my geography is just rubbish. But I know where Nashville is, so
That's
that's
it. Well, just
yeah,
we just
right
say
on.
Nashville. We say country music, and everyone kind of
Okay,
knows
right
where
on.
we are.
And so primarily in that job, you're treating people with sleep apnea day in, day out, all the time, right?
Yeah, we've probably put between 50 and 70,000 people on CPAP in our practice over
Wow.
the years, quite a bit. Yeah,
Wow.
it's 300 new referrals a week.
Let's just start with what were you seeing over the years among your patients of what they were telling you about their experiences with CPAP and problems they were having?
Well, they're all the standard things that are online, but where we may differ back in 05, 06, when modems were available. Now they were wired modems. They had to go through your telephone line when people actually had phones in their house,
Yes,
not
yes,
cell
yes.
phones. Yeah. And so we began to put those on everyone who at least had a home line. Now, then we, help pilot the first wireless modem with Respironics, which became Philips.
So what you're talking about is to track people's usage and their data of their CPAP machine.
We did a small study back in 2002 or so, but we had to actually bring their machine in and look at the recorded time. And it's one of those things where people who are doing well want to come in and show you. And the people that aren't doing well don't want to come in. So many, you know, sleep physicians, you know, have this false idea that all their patients are wearing CPAP, or at least most of them, and that's really not true.
Right.
And the first time we were really able to really know that is when we put modems on everyone. And then you really know who's wearing and who's not. And
right.
So, and then the ones that you don't get data on, you just have to assume they're not wearing.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
So, and so then we started using behavioral therapy, and our whole focus has been on adherence. So our whole focus has been seeing who's not wearing, calling, trying to intervene, answer questions, make changes to try to get as many people as we could adherent. And then from 2012 to 2016, we collected data on 4,000 consecutive patients that we just published in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine back in January of 21.
So I would say that in the fact that you were following up at all, but especially that you're actively contacting patients and encouraging their adherence, that you're in the minority among sleep specialists. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't know what everyone else does.
Yeah,
I just know
people are not doing that.
Well, my view, this is the therapy. And if we're not able to help them wear it and get them to wear it, there's two parts to that. There's number one, letting them understand the benefit. So education on the front end is huge.
Right.
So we're constantly talking about their comorbidities. And we want them to know when they're wearing CPAP, we're also treating their diabetes and their
right.
hypertension, preventing
right.
heart attacks. And so to get them to understand the need and then to help them with the problems that arise from wearing it. And so there's two parts to that. But that kind of gets us to where we are today, because after my article came out in 21, I began to look in another area I'd never looked at. Everything I've done, Emma, has really been mostly behavioral. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we really encouraged nasal pillows for the last 20 years because the nasal pillow dilates the nasal airway up there. Mm-hmm. Because nasal pillows, actually people need less.
And they did studies that adherence is better for people that can tolerate nasal pillows.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk about today is years ago, yes, but the way the machines have been designed in recent
right.
years,
yes.
it's made it more difficult.
Right.
And we've got to get back to the old way again.
Yeah.
But everything was behavioral. But then starting after January of 21, you know, there was a change at Philips, and one of their senior, I'll say senior leadership, because he was let go after the recall.
Yes.
But he came into Nashville to meet.
There's been a lot of changes at Philips.
Yeah. He came to Nashville to meet with me. And, you know, we pretty much always use mostly Philips machines. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can keep people in one data bank more than the other. But we have tended to use more ResMed masks, which is very common.
Yeah.
And he was just upset, wanted our mask business. And I kind of told him, I said, look, I let my respiratory therapists and sleep techs make that decision. You know, they're the experts. Your reps have full access to market to them. If they're choosing ResMed,
yeah.
you know, over your mask, you know, that's really your problem. And
yeah.
it really woke me up. And I began to look into it and interview people and then interviewed engineers. And I've gone quite deep, as you probably could tell. And
yeah.
and I'm just embarrassed that for 28 years, I didn't look into this. I mean,
yeah.
on a ventilator in the ICU, I would know everything about
yeah.
that, the resistance in the system, the flow rates, not just pressure. But when they're on CPAP, well, let's start them on 5 to 20 of AutoPAP and, you know.
Right.
And what I've discovered, you know, the VCOM is just one part.
And would you say that a lot of that is, I feel like a lot of that was coming from sleep specialists just kind of trusting that all of these different manufacturers of CPAP equipment and masks, they were doing what they said they were doing and no problem. Let's just go ahead and you know, set it and forget it and just put it on the APAP setting and be done. But there's kind of problems with that, right?
So out of your closet has come great wisdom and great truth. And yes, and I was so guilty of that. If I had a question about how it worked, I would call the rep. You know,
yeah.
a lot of my questions did get pushed up to, you know, higher level, you know, people, engineers and
yeah.
stuff. But I just thought they knew so much more than I did or could ever
yeah.
know that, you know, just follow them. And when I looked behind the veil, I found that, you know, no one's minding the shop. It's really kind of a mess. This whole IPAP issue that, you know, I'm bringing to light,
yeah,
that my field is really grabbing, because it's just common sense. It's so funny. I was at the Kentucky Sleep Society, you know, last week, you know, giving their keynote lecture. And, you know, when I threw all this out, everyone kind of looks kind of like shocked at each other. And they're like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And they all said it makes sense, you know, and a lot of them are saying, you know, I've wondered this over the years, but we never question it. And
so I want to make sure that we don't lose people listening who are largely ordinary CPAP users, right? So when you're talking about IPAP, so you talk about inspiratory and expiratory different pressures. Can you explain a little bit about that and what that is?
So CPAP is for continuous positive airway pressure.
Yes.
And it's really never continuous, because when you breathe in, the pressure drops.
Right.
Because you're dropping the pressure. In order to create airflow into your lungs, the pressure has to be lower in the lung than it is in the airway or from the machine for airflow to go. And for you to breathe out, you have to raise the pressure to go the other way. Flow only happens because pressure makes it. All right. Flow doesn't really exist on its own. It's the result of pressure and resistance. But so the way older CPAPs were, they weren't as sophisticated. And so when you breathe in, the pressure really dropped lots of times. And that was more comfortable. That was more natural. Humans expect to breathe in and have the pressure drop, because that's what you're doing right now in the closet, is when you breathe in, the pressure is dropping. Well, when we invented BiPAP, Dr. Mark Sanders and Nancy Kern at Respironics in 1990, they were, you know, doing ventilators on one side of the room, CPAPs on the other. And this whole idea, by having the inspiratory pressure, which we call IPAP, inspiratory positive airway pressure, and the expiratory pressure, EPAP, okay, that they could now separate those and they could control it. And by having IPAP higher than EPAP, you can actually force air into the lungs. And for people with bad lungs, okay, or poor chest wall compliance, or, you know, neurologic disease, people who need ventilation, not treating sleep apnea, people who need ventilation, having the difference between IPAP and having EPAP lower helps the work of breathing for them. And somehow we crossed over to, well, that'll help the work of breathing for people with normal lungs who just have sleep apnea. And that's where we really got off track. There could be a money thing here. In other words, I may not be the first to really bring this to light. They may have figured it out in the companies, but no one said anything because they were making billions, not millions, billions off BiPAP. So what happened is if someone was not adherent to CPAP, that gave the DME the opportunity now to sell them a $3,000 machine.
BiPAP.
And it's never really been shown, except in a few cases of patients like with COPD and really morbid obesity. It's never been shown to improve adherence. All right. But people could make a lot more money on it. So, you know, I mean, you know, respiratory therapists at different DMEs in the past, I knew, were given incentives to get more people on BiPAP, because, you know, they can make so much more income. You know, let's take away the, you know, the draconian idea of that.
So I just want to make sure we don't lose anybody. So CPAP, you just said that it's not one pressure because you're breathing, but essentially the machine is sending one pressure. And then BiPAP, it's a different pressure when you breathe in and you breathe out, right? Okay, just check.
Right. And so while BiPAP is probably the greatest thing for non-invasive ventilation, for being able to ventilate patients, keep them breathing without having to put a tube down their throat, okay? It's not been for sleep disordered breathing or sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea particularly. And that's what we've missed. And this whole idea of IPAP higher than EPAP has been hurting people, hurting adherence, causing complications, side effects to CPAP that we didn't have before the machines were, quote, less sophisticated. So in 2003, Philips came out with C-Flex. Now, C-Flex, what it does, it drops the pressure on expiration, does it flow-based. Then a couple of years later, ResMed came out with their expiratory pressure relief.
EPR thing,
It's the same thing. It's the only difference is it's not flow-based, and they argue back and forth. But really, that's where we got the train off the ship, because off the tracks, mixing my metaphors, because the fact that now all the CPAPs effectively became BiPAPs.
Right. So just to kind of bring my experience as a patient into it. So I've been a CPAP user for 14 years. And when I got, originally I had a very like basic machine that was just a CPAP. Then like a lot of people, you know, I went for, I think I started having some symptoms again. And the doctor said, you know, we haven't replaced your CPAP for a long time. Let's get you a new machine. And he was all excited because it was going to be, you know, a ResMed AirSense 10, I think I got. And so he's like, it's an APAP. So it's auto titrating. It's going to be great. Well, when I first started with that machine, and I'd been using CPAP for years at that point, I noticed, you know, that feeling of way too much pressure, even though it had been set to a very similar, you know, it was a range, but it was a similar pressure to what I'd been used to. But I found like the, as I breathed in, it was just like really overwhelming, too much, you know, I would like gulp too much air and all that. And so once you took to the internet and were on all the chat sites, everybody was talking about it and saying, oh, there's an EPR setting. If you change the EPR setting, it's going to be much more comfortable. So honestly, like most people I knew in the little, like, it's not a very big community, the whole sleep apnea thing, especially back in the day. And so as soon as those machines came out, so many people were just talking about like, you know, just bump up your EPR setting. So can you explain a little bit about what that's actually doing to the pressure and why we were getting relief from that?
So the big disconnect that happened is that we got caught up that expiratory pressure was the offending agent. And you know, in the surveys back at that time, about 20% of patients, you know, had trouble exhaling. But initially, the problem is the inspiratory pressure. It's right. Trying to force it in your lungs. If I was to take you in the ICU and I was to sedate you and pharmacologically paralyze you, okay, and put you on 15 centimeters of CPAP, it would just inflate your lungs all the way full and just hold them there. That's right. What it would do. And so when you go on CPAP, you have to resist that pressure. See, you have to learn to breathe backwards. See, breathing in is active, but actively, you know, pulling the air in by lowering the pressure in the chest. When you breathe in on CPAP, it's active as well, but you have to resist the pressure. Whether I'm pulling 5 centimeters or pushing 5 centimeters, right, the same amount of work. But if I'm having to resist 10 centimeters, that's more work than it is to pull 5. And that's where we've lost it, that the IPAP for patients with normal lung mechanics, all right? They don't need IPAP. They don't need it above EPAP. And by doing that, you're leading to all these other problems. And so the other thing to take home that we've missed is EPAP is the therapy. And there's tons
of literature. As you're breathing out?
As you're breathing out, if you stabilize the airway during exhalation, it doesn't matter about inhalation. You've got to stabilize it at the end of exhalation. Okay, right there at time zero. But you, if you do that, the IPAP is less important. In other words, this is the take-home message. They've been jacking up your IPAP for the last 20 years, and they've been doing it for no therapeutic reason and causing, I believe, more problems with people tolerating it and more people having to use full face. And if you go on a full face, the odds of you wearing it long-term have gone way, way down. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm introducing into the world is this whole theory that lowering IPAP below EPAP would be better. Okay. That it would be more comfortable. The problem is no machine in the world does that currently. Well, I won't say no machine. I'm in my lab. I'm doing that. But
you've,
I mean, no, I've got patents on it. Yeah, no commercially available machine yet does that.
This episode of Sleep Apnea Stories is sponsored by BetterHelp. How well we look after our mind really affects how we experience life. Therapy has been so helpful to me since I was diagnosed with sleep apnea. It helped me to work through the feelings I had about going undiagnosed for so long. It also helped me to adjust to living with a chronic condition. One of the best things about starting my podcast has been realizing I'm not alone in coping with mental health issues along with sleep apnea. Speaking to a professional therapist has helped me enormously to manage my anxiety and depression. BetterHelp is online therapy and it's much more affordable than in-person sessions. You can get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Emma. That's betterhelp.com/Emma.
It will.
So I shared a little video on my Instagram of the VCOM you guys sent me, and we'll get on to what that is and all that in a second. But one of the big things that everybody kept saying to me was, oh, I don't understand. Well, my doctor has to set my pressure. And if that, you know, if there's a device that changes your pressure, then that's going to not be an effective treatment. So what you're saying is, they're completely different, like the IPAP and the EPAP part of it. Like it's actually the EPAP part that is deciding whether it's, you know, like enough pressure to hold your airway open, basically.
So it's all backwards. I mean, the field's been backwards for 20 years and I was backwards. Okay. And, you know, I'm embarrassed about it, you know, that I didn't treat it like a ventilator. Oh, just give me, you know, and I just listened to the manufacturers and boy, that was a mistake. You know, I know now. And EPAP is therapy. So if you drop EPAP, like with EPR or C-Flex with these expiratory reduction, you're dropping therapy.
Right.
Okay. I mean, for instance, the most common thing happens at a DME is they switch their mask to a full face. I mean, it's like before the door closes, when you walk in, they're going to switch you to a full face in many offices. I mean, there's respiratory therapists I've interviewed. That's all they use is full face because then no one calls.
I could talk about this for 4 hours.
Yeah.
But this is one of the things that drives me crazy is, so I have a largely not functioning nose, which is a problem, which is like so many people with sleep apnea, right? But that's not good. We should be encouraging people to breathe through their nose because that's how they're supposed to breathe, right? Like, it's not great to just kind of, to me, it should be the other way around. And you should start with nasal pillows. And if they can't do that, do a nasal mask. And if they can't do that, do a full face mask. But it seems like a lot of places, the DME people are saying, just do a full face mask, because then if that doesn't work, you don't have to come back and no big deal. And this will suit anyone, however you breathe. And if you don't really know if you're a mouth breather, then just take this. And that just seems all backwards to me.
It is backwards. And that's what happens. And that's what I want to change. And so, for instance, if you were titrated to 16 centimeters in the lab and they put you on a nasal pillow and you were having some trouble and you show up at a DME office and they go, well, first, we're going to put you on EPR. So that's going to drop you 3 centimeters on EPAP, which is therapy. Won't drop your IPAP, but IPAP's not therapy. Okay. So now instead of getting 16, you're getting 13. And now I put you on a full face mask. Well, that's going to drop you at least 2 from a nasal pillow, depending on the size of the nasal pillow cushion. So now you're walking out of there at 11 centimeters and you're not getting treated. And they think they did a good job. And that's the problem. There is an EPAP that every airway needs, and they need that EPAP, and they're going to get it. In other words, if you're on AutoPAP and you turn on EPR, it's just going to titrate the IPAP higher because the EPAP's got to go back to where it has to be. And we've got this idea that I believed like gospel, you know, all these years, that you titrate the EPAP up to get rid of the apneas, and then you use the IPAP to get rid of the hypopneas and the snoring. And it's just not true. You need EPAP. And once you get the right EPAP and stabilize the airway during exhalation, the rest doesn't matter. So going back to your mask thing. So what's happened is you see that normal drop in pressure during inspiration. The engineers were told, hey, you got to maintain therapy throughout inspiration too. Well, the pressure is going to drop. Well, right. but the marketing people say, hey, we want to advertise our machine that it only varies in pressure, you know, 1 point something centimeters, you know, during the cycle. And it's so foolish because you want it to drop during inspiration for comfort, right. But they've determined, no, it's not. Well, one of the reasons nasal pillows were so comfortable years and years ago, we'll say more than 10 years ago, yeah, is because the pressure would drop even more with a nasal pillow on inspiration, because the resistance in the cushion, the little holes, made the pressure drop, right? And therefore, when you breathe out against it, it made the pressure higher in the pharynx. So you needed less set pressure on the machine, made the machine quieter, dropped all the flows, just made everything better, right? So, but they go, oh no, we can't have that pressure drop on inspiration. So that's why you have to, when you set a nasal pillow setting on your machine or an X2 on a Phillips, you know, yeah, all that's going to do is jack the pressure up even more on inspiration. So when you jack that pressure up on inspiration to counteract the drop in pressure that you're going to have across the resistance, well, then going through that little bitty hole, guess what? The same flow now has to increase velocity. So it's like taking an air jet and spraying the inside of the nostril. And that's why people can't tolerate it. That's forcing people to full face masks that don't have any resistance in them. And they're losing the benefit on exhalation.
Right.
And they're having to put all that strap and stuff on when they could tolerate a nasal pillow.
Yeah.
We treat over 90% of our patients end up on nasal pillow in our practice.
That's
and
great.
Been going that way for years. And I think that's why our adherence is higher in the literature.
Yeah.
You know, partly because of that. I'll tell you this, the number one resupply mask in the Phillips is the Nuance, their nasal pillow. Okay. And they're discontinuing it, which it just makes no sense because that mask has great advantages at high pressure. And then of course, the number one mask is the P10 by ResMed. So it's interesting, the two masks that are the most resupplied, meaning that the patient's using it long-term,
yes,
are nasal pillow masks. I mean, that ought to tell, yeah, you right there,
yeah,
that makes the difference.
So I think we kind of glossed over it, but just for people listening, can you explain, like, one of the things I heard you talking on the Enzo Data webinar, and that's when I was like, I've got to talk to that guy. But you were talking about different masks, different mask shapes, different manufacturers can change the pressure.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So tell us about that, because I think that's kind of a shocker.
So Phillips masks, particularly their nasal pillow cushions, have more resistance in them at the medium and large side. Small, they're all about the same. And ResMed masks have less, but ResMed has one setting for like all three nasal pillow cushions. So
yes,
you put it on nasal pillow, but of course the point is we don't even use that. We set every machine on full face. And the reason we do that, even though we're using nasal pillow on everyone, because I don't want, they're engineering screwy.
Oh.
You see, we're trying to protect the patient from jacking up the pressure. On a full face, it's not expecting any resistance. So it doesn't jack the pressure up as much. If you put in nasal pillow, it's going to jack the pressure up more.
Oh.
See, the machines become so sophisticated that they've developed these what called low inertia turbines, and they have now motor speed control instead of valve. So it can change pressure instantaneously. And so when it senses you start to breathe in, it's going to jack that up. And that's why people can't handle nasal pillows. They said that all that blowing in my nose. Well, if the pressure would normally drop like it should with the resistance and your inspiratory effort, well, then it would be so much more comfortable. And
so what can we do? Like, so you basically don't have any of your patients putting EPR on it.
No, we stopped that a while,
yeah,
back. We used,
okay,
to. I mean, we had I had everyone on it for,
yeah,
you know, 20 years or 15. That's it's kind of embarrassing because they've got to have.
I know, but thank you for being the one person saying there's a problem.
Well, if someone's having trouble tolerating the pressure, they're going to have to get used to the EPAP one way or another. I mean, there's a certain EPAP they're going to need,
yes,
and they're going to have to get used to it. The thought was behind all this that EPAP was more offensive, and by lowering the EPAP and giving higher IPAP, I can still treat them. And that's just not really that true. I mean, there are exceptions, but in general, EPAP is the issue. IPAP is the offensive part. You see, when the more IPAP you're blowing down their lung, you're blowing it down their esophagus. So it's causing aerophagia. That air's got to go somewhere that goes in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when people get like that feeling that they've swallowed air and they have like bloating in their stomach and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I remember patients having aerophagia on CPAP that we would switch to BiPAP because we were told, oh, that would help that. And, you know, I didn't think through it enough. I mean, now I realize how stupid that was. You know, I remember this one particular doctor who was a patient and I put him on BiPAP and he really couldn't tell any difference. And, you know, I think there was a disconnect. The physicians weren't giving, we as a group weren't giving the right feedback to the engineers. Yes. You know, the engineers did what they were told. They didn't do anything. Right. They just don't know. I mean, when I ask engineers about, you know, the nasal resistance, and because, you know, when you breathe through your nose, you have another resistor. And so you drop pressure even more on a nasal mask of any type, because you go across the, you know, the depending on your congestion, the resistance could be real high. And then when you breathe out through your nose, you build EPAP. And that's why nasal masks need lower pressure than a full face. But it's just kind of embarrassing, you know, that we as a field, we go in the ICU and we know everything about the ventilator.
Yeah.
And we just order CPAP and we've sort of treated it.
And oftentimes now, like, it seems like this is not happening maybe as much in your clinic, but I've never had a titrating study ever. And I've been on CPAP for 14 years. Like, it was only a lot later on when I started discovering Oscar and, you know, people out there that were like, oh, maybe your pressure isn't right. And then with the APAP, I still never had a titrating study. They just set a range. This episode is sponsored by Vivos Therapeutics. Do you wake up feeling tired or exhausted? Are you struggling to sleep using a CPAP? If you have mild to moderate OSA, there is a better way to help you sleep and, more importantly, breathe at night. It's the Vivos Method from Vivos Therapeutics. The Vivos Method is a non-invasive and non-surgical treatment provided by dentists and medical providers. This natural approach works by expanding the oral cavity, which may result in a larger airway, allowing you to breathe and sleep more deeply at night. More importantly, the Vivos Method may create a long-term change in the health of your airway, which could alleviate the need for CPAPs. But don't just take our word for it. Over 27,000 patients worldwide have used the Vivos Method to treat their mild to moderate obstructive sleep apnea and are now enjoying a more restful quality of sleep. If you're ready to potentially ditch your CPAP and enjoy a better quality of sleep, simply go to vivos.com/patients. Take a quick online assessment and you'll be directed to a provider near you. That's vivos.com/patients. So the thing I did want to ask you about was, so do you want to just explain to everybody where this idea for your VCOM thing came from and maybe try and explain to us what exactly that does?
So the idea came up once I started investigating all this and you know, really focusing on it. I mean, I had to relearn calculus. I had to relearn physics. I remember one holiday morning, they were looking for me for breakfast and I was down here reading, you know, gas laws. You know, years or so ago, and I was, you know, I get onto things. I get a little carried away at times. So I came up with this idea that if I could reduce IPAP, you know, that would, but I needed to test it. So, but there was no machine, you know, that I could do that on. And so I had to invent a way to drop the IPAP and, you know, and keep EPAP up. And so the way to do that was add what we call non-compensated resistance into the circuit. So I made the first VCOM. It was 3D printed, you know, the first few of them back in July. I just made a prototype, just, you know, a few of them that, you know, I would put on, you know, just volunteers, friends, a lot of executives and staff from different manufacturers, showing them, you know, and people could feel the difference immediately. You know, we say 15 seconds is better than 15 minutes of explanation. And so I did all that and was trying to figure out what to do. And then finally, I realized the only way I'm going to really prove this, I'm going to have to manufacture it get it FDA, you know, get the FDA requirements done, and I can put it on patients, and then I can have real data.
Yes.
And then, you know, because what I'm telling you, I didn't tell anyone publicly that I was thinking this. I mean, I didn't.
Because you kind of probably quite rightly thought that everybody would be like, what?
Well,
just because it's so going against what everybody else is doing, right?
Well, I mean, I was probably the worst critic. I mean, I didn't believe it myself. You know, I could feel the difference, and I put it on all these people and they could all feel the difference, but I knew there had to be something I'm missing. You know, this is just too weird. How could the whole field be off like this, you know?
Well, and here's a really funny thing though, listening to you talk about it. It makes me feel a million times better as a patient and as someone that spends all our time talking to patients, because, you know, I think you can start thinking you're crazy. Like, I remember, you know, trying to explain to my doctor when I got this new machine, well, it just feels really different. And, you know, and they would just be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, it's fine. You know, where another people would say the same thing. Like, I used to be able to do a nasal pillow mask, but now the pressure feels totally different. So we're not crazy. It's a good takeaway.
No, you're not. You know, the famous saying in medicine, if you listen long enough, the patient will tell you what's wrong and what they need.
Yeah.
But the problem is you have to listen long enough, you know, to do that. So anyway, made the prototypes. And then, you know, I kept doing experiments and more experiments. And a lot of this I had to kind of learn. I mean, I just kept learning and learning and learning because it's just so foreign to what we do as doctors, you know, basically trying. And who I talk to all the time are engineers.
Yes.
You know, physicians, they would look at me like, you're crazy, you know? Yeah. And so finally I decided to make it. So we, you know, started working with a manufacturer to mold it and, you know, make the first mold and then, you know, had to get them out in time and get all the FDA, you know, requirements, you know, to get it registered. And I got all that done. And the goal was to get it done to release it at APSS at the sleep meetings.
Yeah.
And we did, we had a booth and we had 300 doctors or NPs, mostly all docs, sleep doctors, actually put on a CPAP mask there at the booth and feel the difference of the VCOM and get to experience it and get the feedback from them. And I would kind of get to explain to them the physics of it.
Yeah.
And so the other thing, of course, we were able to start doing is putting it on patients. And that's what's really given me the confidence now to go forward because I have enough data. And be honest, all my peers that I've had a chance to share all this with, you know, they all jump like that. You know, I was at the University of Utah doing grand rounds for their sleep department the week before last. And, you know, I mean, one of the most senior faculty is, you know, had already tried this and put it on patients and had data. But when I shared all this, I mean, the whole department's like, you know, they're all excited about doing all these studies with us and partnering with us. And Dr. Krishna Sundar, who's chief of sleep there, you know, he was here. We had dinner in Nashville last week. And, you know, planning all kind of experiments. So the same thing when I was in Kentucky last weekend, you know, everyone's excited to do this. Here's the bottom line. The machines are uncomfortable. They've over-engineered. Okay. They jacked up this IPAP really for no therapeutic reason to make it uncomfortable, causing all these other problems. Okay. Causing mouth opening, leak, all this stuff. Yeah. And the only way to fix it right now is a VCOM. Because a VCOM is the only way that's, you know, FDA, you know, registered a device to put in there that will drop IPAP.
So I want you to carry on, but I also just want to just make sure we don't lose anybody. So the VCOM is, do you want to explain like what it looks like?
This is it right here. It's perfect. A resistor. It goes here between the mask hose. Here's a nasal pillow mask.
Yep.
It goes here and the circuit hose goes here.
Yes.
And you put it right in.
So it's something that fits between the mask hose and the CPAP.
So this is very important because resistance is flow dependent. So the pressure drop is flow dependent. So on inspiration, you have lots of flow because you have the tidal volume coming to the patient. Yes. So on inspiration, you have lots of flow. So you have big pressure drop. On exhalation, you have very little flow across it, especially at low pressures. You have none hardly. And so therefore it maintains EPAP. Here's the bottom line. EPR drops EPAP, which is therapy, okay, but maintains the IPAP.
Yes, that's not what we want to do. No, we want to lower IPAP and raise EPAP.
Or maintain EPAP.
Or maintain
This maintains therapy, maintains EPAP. It's backwards. And that's where we've been. We've been backwards for these years. And that's important. Now, if you go and you just turn down the pressure, like say someone's on 12, they can't handle it. So you turn them down to 9. Well, you drop EPAP and IPAP. Okay. And so the VCOM drops the IPAP without much effect. Well, at real high pressures, you're still going to have some flow across it. All right. So it can drop a little bit, but if you're on a little auto, it'll just titrate up. So say you need another half centimeter or whatever. Yeah. So that's what it does. Now, here's what's fascinating. We released it with the idea of training wheels.
I mean, the whole thing's fascinating, honestly.
But we released it as the idea of training wheels for CPAP. Okay. Yeah. That it was going to be for new patients. I thought patients who are already used to the flow, already used to that pressure, don't need it. You've already gotten used to it. They're not.
No, we still need it, Dr. Noah.
Well, that's what we found in our studies.
Yeah.
Confirming that it doesn't affect therapy. You know, 101 patients, 63 ResMed machine, 21 Philips and 17 ReactHealth. So on those 101 patients, 80% or 77% who got to try it, you know, in their circuit, you know, for to do this experiment, to wear it for 4 nights. These are people who've already been wearing CPAP for a year or two.
Oh, yeah.
And doing well. So almost 80% wanted to leave it in their circuit. Hey, can I keep this? I like the feel of it better. Hey, my wife likes that the sound is less. Hey, my mouth's not coming open now. My leak is less in the morning. My AHI is less in the morning. And what we found out in those 101 patients is the VCOM didn't adversely affect therapy. In other words, their P95%, P90% didn't change, right? But what we found is it decreased the leak tremendously. In fact, the p-value was 0.0001, and it also reduced the residual index, and that p-value was 0.001. So, you know, it looks like it may actually improve therapy by decreasing the leak in people who are already doing well. The other thing we thought is people would just discard it. You know, you use it till you're used to the pressure and you don't need it. Well, we're not, you know, we're in month 4 now, I guess. Yeah. And what we're finding is the ones who put it in their circuit, they don't ever take it out. They like the feel because it's rounding off the flow curve, makes it smoother. And I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know it would fix mouth open. You know, we've reduced chin straps by 85% because of this. I didn't think that. I never thought of that. One of my sleep techs discovered that right off the bat the first week we used it. And of course, the big exciting thing for me is I had this theory last November of what was creating treatment emergent central sleep apnea. And the only way I could prove my theory was to release this. And we've had 14 cases consecutively in the lab, and it's resolved all 14 cases. So we're pretty excited.
Explain to people listening about the central, what you just talked about. Just explain that a little bit more. So people developing central apneas
because of the pressure.
Because of the pressure.
Yeah. And my theory was, so central sleep apnea is just a function usually of CO2 that you have a threshold to where if your CO2 gets below that threshold while you're asleep, then your brain will pause and let the CO2 come up before you take another breath. And that time period is more than 10 seconds is called a central apnea. All right. And so the whole thought of this engineering term called loop gain.
Yes.
That's been the whole thing behind it. But even with loop gain or a high loop gain or an unstable system, you still got to have some hyperventilation. You got to have some increase in minute ventilation or in the size of the tidal volume in order to blow that CO2 down. Well, my whole theory was that the PAP itself, because it's trying to expand the lung, all right, it's increasing tidal volume on new patients until they get used to where they can control it themselves. And that's why this treatment emergent goes away, you know, because people get used to the CPAP and they're able to control that pressure, resist it, and then they bring their tidal volumes back down. There was a study back in 1978 before Colin Sullivan ever used CPAP to treat sleep apnea, these two researchers, Barbara Bishop and another lady up at Buffalo, New York University, and they showed that CPAP increased tidal volume and increased minute ventilation. And we've known that for years. So it's so funny. C-Flex came out in 2003, EPR a year or two later. Okay. Well, guess what we
discovered? So that's discovered? Philips and ResMed respectively.
Right. But guess what we discovered in 2005? Robert Thomas at Harvard discovered TEXA, or Treatment Emergent Central Sleep Apnea. He discovered this entity because we caused it. You see, when we invented the EPRs and C-Flex, we caused it. And this, by dropping IPAP, resolves it. So I'm really excited about that. And it's so funny that we just had our, I don't know if it's funny or what, but it's, I guess it's a little embarrassing. But the good news is now we know. And right. now the VCOM will fix, you know, fits with any machine.
And we can improve things for patients. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm really already obsoleting it because, you know, ultimately we need to change the algorithms in the machine.
Right.
So that they are more comfortable. In fact, by altering the algorithm, I can actually do a better job than even the VCOM can. But right now, this improves the functioning of all the other machines.
And so, all the people listening are going to want one. So do they have to go through their DME? Is there a way to get this just as a consumer, or what's the best way for people to find it?
I guess I should answer that. Yes. it'll be up in a few weeks. There will be, and I can send you the information, but it's going to be, since it doesn't need a prescription.
Yeah.
Well, we say that if you have a, you have to have a prescription for CPAP.
Yes.
Because it's an accessory to CPAP, but it doesn't have to have a separate prescription.
Okay.
It will be available online, different CPAP stores. And we're going to be, another company is going to be selling it online to patients to make it available. Because, you know, now there's going to be, a 15, I don't know, maybe 20% of long-term users who aren't going to prefer it. Although their wives are probably going to want it because it's quieter. I use one every night now.
But probably those people are just used to it, right? Like, you know, people just kind of get so that they're used to whatever they're doing.
Right. But what I was shocked at is 80% of those who are used to it still preferred it.
I know.
We just found that out, you know, last month. And so now we're going to make it available to those people to get it. It's very inexpensive. And I think they're going to offer like a money back guarantee. So if you're one of those who, you know, it didn't improve that, you know, you can get your money back. Right. So,
well, listen, I could talk to you for 5 hours, but I'm going to have to let you go. But I really appreciate your time explaining all this to us.
Well, thank you, Emma, for what you're doing to help improve the education and knowledge of the community who are CPAP users. I think it's wonderful. Your closet has never had such a future plan for it.
Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, you can always reach me on Instagram. My handle there is @sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience to find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.